tonight on Big Head Mode. Bardia, Carlo, and myself, Ben, we're going to be getting right deep into Fallout 4. That's right, tonight. It's all about Fallout 4, guys. We're going to be talking about story. We're going to be talking about gameplay. We're going to be talking about graphics, music, people, life, love, betrayal, hatred. All the things that happen in Fallout 4. You guys excited? You read anything particular you want to talk about?
The betrayal, I think. I just want to see where that goes.
Yeah. Well, just you wait, buddy. It could happen on this very show.
Dear God.
Look, that's all coming up on 2RRR's One and Only Gaming Show, Big Head Mode.
Yeah.
That's right, you are on Big Head Mode. That goofy laughter there is Bardia McKinnon, who is in one corner. Bardia, thanks
for
joining us.
Hey.
You're doing well.
I'm doing good.
I'm bloody back. Hot today in Sydney, folks. Also joining us here, looking very, very cash in his stripy T-shirt and shorts. It's Carlo Ritchie. Carlo.
Hey, guys. These are also my swimmers, these shorts.
Well, that's functional. That is functional and logical. And
good for the radio.
He is splashing. That's just the kiddie pool that is brought in with him.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm Ben O'Brien. Guys, we're going to be talking about games. Because I've had a bloody gut full of games. We're a little bit tired. It's the day after our final bonus stage of the year. Bonus stage being the live gaming talk show we do once a month on stage.
And it was a pretty amazing show. We had Dr. Carl on.
He knew a lot about, he knew more about fake video game things than I thought he would.
Yeah.
He taught us you probably could survive in a lava fortress as long as you're within 2 meters of the lava.
Because he's smarter than us. He's smarter than all of us.
See, I'm that nerd who in scenes in movies when a character is near a volcano goes, yeah, you can never survive that close to lava. Turns out you can.
Yeah.
There we go.
No, it was great. Who else did we have? We had Lucy O'Brien from IGN Australia.
Which was great.
Yep.
She was a very good sport when we made her guess which news headlines were fake or real, and they were all real.
The trend emerged real early on.
Yeah, but I feel like she still thought we were going to throw in a curveball. Mm-hmm. We didn't.
No. We don't do that. We don't like to.
And we had also Lee Namo from Insert Coin and Axis of Awesome, which was awesome.
And we played a bit of Fallout. A lot of stuff we talked about, we're probably going to talk about on the show now, too.
So if you're at the show, you can just tune out now.
Yeah. No.
We'll see you guys later.
We'll go deeper. We'll go further. We'll dig much deeper. To start things off, guys, I just wanted to talk about. So I've just moved house.
Broke about.
And
mate. Yeah.
All right.
Carlo's in a snippy mood today.
He really is. It's because he's wearing his swimmers.
And then he's not in a pool.
He's indoors and he wants to be in the pool. And I'm really happy with myself because it's the first time I've ever set up a little gaming setup. You know, I had a little gaming nook.
Yeah.
And there aren't at least 13 wires just jangling over the side of the...
What's the cause of... Why aren't there any wires?
It's the first time... Because I went out and actually bought a proper entertainment sort of...
Are you saying you're better
not
than me?
System, because that sounds like an electric, a cabinet. An IKEA cabinet.
You're saying you're better than me because I've got
I would say the 8 pieces of wood and the 4 hours it took to put those drawers together definitely makes me better than you, Bardia.
All right.
But it's a power you can get yourself if you just went to IKEA.
Nah, see, what I do is I just hang the cords over the back of a table, and then that way there aren't any cords either.
I leave them exposed so I
can
trip on it
later. Yeah, there are cords, but then what happens when you have to, remove stuff? You go back there, and it's like you're, digging through the tentacles of a dead octopus.
It is kind
of
like that, yeah.
It's a lot like that.
I just keep each one.
That silent look doesn't do much
again,
on radio.
On the radio, the joke doesn't work.
But I wanted to ask you, because, I don't have internet. I haven't been able to game much, so I haven't been able to use it the most, but I still think it's the best gaming setup I've had. I've got a neat little entertainment system with three open things on the top where it's neatly got Xbox One, PS4, and then as of yet unused. I mean, I could put anything
could
in there.
Could be anything.
Could be the Nintendo 64.
Snacks.
Could
Wii
be
U?
Snacks. Could be my Wii U, but who has one, you know?
You do.
I do.
Oh.
I do. But I wonder, what would your guys' ideal gaming setup be?
Well, not what I got now. where there's just crap everywhere. I mean, what you got, I want that. I just want calm and order.
I really want a projector.
Oh, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Because I feel
our friend Simon, who comes on the show, bought an amazing projector.
Yeah, well, I always feel like that's the best use of space, because you can project it onto a wall and therefore make it any size depending on how much distance you have between it and the wall. As long as you've got a little bit of space, you've got quite a large television. It reduces all your cabling.
Yeah.
And
is it clear? Like, does it look good?
Oh yeah. If you get a top range projector now,
yeah,
the HDMI quality on that is pretty mint.
I think anything with those projectors is you really need like at least a basic sound system, I reckon, because the sound that comes out of those little projectors ain't the best.
I've never gamed with like surround sound.
Oh really?
I would love that.
It's all about sound.
Yeah,
it really is.
I've always just used the speakers that are built into the TV, which are never good.
Yeah, but you know what? You can solve that. I mean, like the beauty of my new gaming setup, because I've got a very small room to work with, and because it's sort of a combined study, so half the room has to fit like a desk and computer and stuff. So the TV and the couch, it's only like a meter and a half away from each other, but it's close enough that I can just really neatly have a pair of headphones plugged in, and because I live in a place with three other people. Late night gaming, put the headphones on, and it's like as good or better than what a sound system would effectively do anyway. Probably not the best if you're doing some communal gaming.
Guys, can you shut up? I just got my headphones on.
But who needs people when you've got a really good looking sound system?
Headphone gaming is actually really immersive, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember
in horror games. Or
Alien Isolation.
Oh, that was terrifying. Yeah. I couldn't play that with headphones because you could hear every little far off rattle or vent.
You hear a lot, and you hear a lot more as well. Like you become so aware of when you're not hearing something. Oh, it was good.
Absolutely.
God, that game was so much fun.
It is amazing the kind of technology that exists now in terms of
some of those headphones.
Headphones.
Virtual 7.1, because virtual surround is usually cheaper. Because it's.
Although I just I want I need a headphone dealer. I need someone who I can trust.
I gotta go.
Who can just go? Okay, what do you want? These are the kinds you like. Because when you go headphone shopping, everything. The way they market it to gamers is just like optimum extreme gamers headsets, and it's like, well, I kind of just want something that stuff sounds good.
The Sony ones, the official Sony ones, they're pretty good. Like I said, they're virtual 5.1 or 7.1, but surprisingly good, and they're the most cost effective. Because those gaming headsets, they're like $300. Some of them,
yeah, but I think that those proper gaming headsets are just terrible for social gaming. Because like you get the ones that have, they've got the little dials that let you sort of fade in and out game volume to friend chatter, and it just hearing it all in your ears is just sort of, it's too much. It's too much for like two ears to handle. You know, it's like having a conversation with people in a nightclub, because you're having all of that music and game sound pumped straight into your ears at the same time, in the same distance to your ears as you're hearing the voices. So you can't differentiate it in the same way, whereas if you were sitting in a room with your friends playing that game, it's just like too much.
Well, you know, the world is evolving. You never know what could happen.
And so are ears. I mean, you get a few more ears, and you can have two sets of headphones on at once.
Here's a fun little fact. You know, every single ear, like every person's ear, is as unique as the fingerprint.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they have ear scans?
I don't know. I guess it's easier to do a fingerprint. Way easier.
Yeah, way easier, Ben. How dare you even ask? You should have mentioned.
But there was a really cool exhibition.
Because they have fingerprints.
There was a really cool exhibition in Sydney a few years ago where they just, a guy had sketched 300 ears, and every single one was unique. And he said it was amazing for him as a process, because he met all the people and sketched all of their ears. Yeah. That at the end of it, he go, oh yeah, that's... you know, such and such as a year, and that's loose.
I mean, do you think he realized he's been a really bad artist?
Do you think he just realized his skill at a really young age? He can only do ears. Like that's
he's the ear whisperer.
He's the ear guy. Yeah. if you need anyone, I know a guy.
Dearie me. Well, look, let's go to some music. All the music tonight is Fallout theme. We're going to start with the Fallout 3 theme by Andrew Skeet. This is from the Greatest Game Music soundtrack, and we're going to come back and talk about our show and tells for this week. Look, buddy, it's always nice to go to music with a bit of finger guns. You're on 2RRR 88.5 FM. And we're back.
Yeah, we are.
Ooh. We're back.
And then that takes me back. Okay,
go. Okay, right. To Fallout 3.
Okay.
Just before Fallout 4.
Well,
funnily
not
enough.
Really. Like, there was one in between.
Give or take, what, 5 years?
Wow. I don't know.
I don't. No, you don't. No. You don't. Look, show and tell. It's the little segment we've just started doing recently where each person on the show for that week brings in a little thing they want to talk about, a game they played, a thing they read, something they heard.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy, why don't you... What do you got for us this week?
I want to talk a bit about on-the-go gaming.
Okay. On the go, gaming.
I've been
it's very brandable.
Yeah, no, it is. I've been a bit
hashtag
poor.
Hashtag on the go.
I've been a bit poor recently, so I've decided to start catching train a little bit more. I've been.
Oh Jesus!
What, like the majority of the population?
No, I don't mean like they're poor. I'm saying I can't afford petrol.
Yeah, just don't drive. If you have the option to take a train, buddy, it's better for the environment and the
what
city.
What are we talking about?
To
here?
Take a train.
Yeah, but it's inconvenient for me to catch a train.
No, it's not.
It is for me.
Okay, mate.
I live far away from a train station.
All I'm saying is look at a bike. Look what happens when society collapses.
A bicycle.
Oh, I don't have one of those. But I feel like I don't want to go anymore.
No, not going. Let's all have fun.
So I've been
on the go old gaming.
Carbon footprint body has got something to tell us about gaming on the go.
Well, it's going to be fine. So I've been playing a lot of my Vita recently. I've been playing a lot of Spelunky and Hotline Miami.
Great.
So I just want to talk about, like, I hadn't ever clocked these games before. I'd never, you know, I'd heard people playing them. I mean, Hotline Miami, I'd dabbled in before, but
and
Spelunky.
And that's come out, that was a while ago, Hotline Miami 2, wasn't
it? It's not 2. See, they didn't release 2 in Australia.
Well, I meant as well, but right. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Is this where you're driving a bus?
This is whilst I'm driving a bus. What?
No, is this the game where you're driving a bus across America?
No. Hotline Miami, it's like this, that neon
80s
top-down
aesthetic kind of...
super violent.
Oh,
sort of thing. It's,
oh
it's,
dear!
It's
in a style, I guess, of like that original GTA series.
Totally, yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah. Really great, like love it. But it was Spelunky that surprisingly hooked me in a lot more than I thought it would.
It's also a challenging game.
It's super challenging. It's that kind of like you have one life, or we have a couple, but it's really hard to when you die, you start again from the very beginning. And there's a bunch of different stages and all that kind of stuff. And man, it is super addictive. Like it's mental.
Mm.
So I wondered what, like, have you guys, on the go gaming isn't really something we talk about very much. I don't think many of us.
Well, I guess like, cause I mean, with mobile gaming as well and handheld and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like reviewing, we haven't reviewed a handheld game for a while because I sort of felt like a lot of people, you know, that. They're not as mainstream, I guess.
And there hasn't really been anything, I don't think, groundbreaking. But
well, I mean, I think the last thing we did was Majora's Mask on the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like that was a very special example.
The 3DS is, I feel like, the only area that Nintendo is still just really pumping out great stuff.
They was even with the DS. Like they kill it with their handheld.
I got that sort of same excitement I had, you know, with the 64 and the GameCube and the first time the Wii came out. You know, like... That same kind of like, oh, what will Nintendo do next? And it's just, you know, even if it's just like Pokemon games and all of that stuff, it's really fun.
There's something about, I think there's something definitely about handheld gaming and like how it draws you in to the, because a lot of them rely on like collectibles or like little bite-sized, smaller action, like pieces. Yeah. And it's, I think that's what I really like about it. I really like, you know, it's just, it's so easy and it's fun and...
Yeah.
Good for a while.
Spelunky is like, it's super addictive. It's becoming a concern.
Oh, there's a game I played in the Vita, because I think it was one of the PlayStation Plus free games 1 month, called Surge. So addictive.
Yeah?
So addictive. And it, like, I don't know how to describe it more anymore than it's just kind of one of those, your classic puzzle sort of match colours and beat the time sort of games.
It's those deadlines.
But it's just like, you know, the visual sort of wow that comes in with sort of a really high pressure. You've got it, basically you get coloured blocks and you have to kind of thread an electrical current between the matching colours. And then it just, you know, it gets more complicated, you get more sort of like bomb blocks and stuff. It's like a classic puzzle blaster sort of game. But boy,
it's that instant gratification. So like Spelunky, you start at the top of this like dungeon and you have to find the door to the next room, eventually through the next level. And along the way, there are like spikes and there are like snake enemies and all this sort of stuff just will kill you immediately. But the moment you find the next room and go through, you're greeted with like this screen of, well done. Really, really good stuff. You did it in this time. You're the best explorer ever. And it's just like, oh, thanks, man.
See, like, on-the-go gaming is weird for me because the really simple sort of gameplay-driven games like that, I love for the bus or, you know, on the toilet, waiting to go somewhere, that kind of thing, right? But, like, I just don't really enjoy the more involved narrative-driven games in the same environments. Like, Majora's Mask, I loved playing it on the 3DS, but I found that I ended up just lying in bed and playing it, or on the couch, or, you know, sitting on the back porch or something, rather than, you know, rather than fitting it into those smaller gaps of, like, public transport. Because you know, it's, I think that's the reason, it's more involved.
And that's the reason I narrative stopped, and I stopped playing it. Because I was playing it at home. I was, like, I was lying in bed playing it, where ideally I'd want to be doing when I'm out, or, like, when I'm on the way somewhere. So that's the reason I stopped playing Majora's Mask.
Because I did the same. I bought the Telltale Games Walking Dead on my phone before I got it on anything else, and then just never played it. Because
I played it first on
my phone. It had a terrible save system, for one thing, where you'd have to play, like, an entire 15-minute sort of level before it saved.
Oh, man.
It's like, you know, and this is on your phone. Like, how often do you have, are you just like, have a solid block of
15 minutes to play,
you know? And so it just kind of put me off those sort of narrative games. So now it's sort of like phone gaming for me is just, you know, your Angry Birds type games, or your quick sort of, you know, flick the colored fruits and punch the jumping monkeys or whatever crazy game's next.
Don't design games.
No, I will. I will. I came up with a great game last night. It's just it was just a thing, like, it's just a body you could punch, and you could just upload photos of different people on the face, and just you tap the button and they go, punch people. You're right.
Do you want to talk about it?
I just thought of some bullies from high school. I'm working through some issues.
Are you crying?
It's fine. It's all fine. What about you, Carl? What's your
well, see, I don't play games on my mobile, but I have been playing. There's a game that I've been playing online, so I'm using it. I can go online on my phone, so I've been playing on my phone. So that's the first time I've been playing a game on my phone, and that is Neptune's Pride, which is, it's an older game. I'm playing, I think, Neptune's Pride 2 is the version we're using. And it's basically a massive competitive space game, space empire building game. So in our game, there are 24 players. The goal is to capture 240 stars. Everybody starts with 8 stars systems and then slowly expands. And so the idea is each star sort of has natural resources. You can terraform planets to get more resources. Some planets will have higher natural, lower natural, etc. So you build up industry on those planets. You build up your research on in those planets. You research various things like weapons, tech, hyperspace travel, scanning, you know. And then you also have you try and build up your economy so you can constantly be funding the war effort. And it generally is a game that the thing about this game is it takes extraordinary long amounts of time. Like, I've just started, my fleet is attacking another player at the moment, and it's going to take 12 hours before my fleet arrives into their star system. So in that time, they could theoretically change the defenses.
Will they know that that's what you're doing?
As soon as I come in within scanning range, and they luckily have quite a small scanning range, so I've got a good jump on them.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so that's, so there's a lot of things to navigate in that sense.
How do you feel about those kind of games that, like, take place over a long period of time and need you to kind of keep checking in?
Well, it's fun in this way because it's very, very minimal, like, checking in. Like, if you check in every couple of hours, that should be fine, unless you're at war. Like, if you're at war, it's such a stressful thing. And if you're constantly paranoid about betrayal, which I am...
Well, I'm always paranoid. Because
this game always breaks into betrayal, like... Players will make ceasefires and then we'll wait until the other person is probably asleep at like 3 a.m. and launch a massive invasion, and the person will wake up and have half of their empire gone. Like, a friend of ours took his partner for dinner, knowing that it would mean that she was away from the computer for several hours, and just before they left, launch a huge attack.
And my god, that's twisted.
Yeah, it's like people do some terrible things, and that's why I generally like I always set myself up as just a very decent, honourable person. If I say that I'm going to do something in the game, I will do it, and I always
it's
try.
True, we will. Makes it a little fun to betray him.
I will always like hold. I've stopped two wars in this game so far where I negotiated on behalf of both players.
Let's just talk
to stop
about
wars.
This.
And for that reason, I have two very strong allies in a formal alliance, and we're doing quite well.
You're going to have to betray them eventually, though, right?
I'm not going to. I won't. Oh, that's like, for me, if
he says that, I don't trust him.
Yeah.
If for me, like,
hang on. So, what's the name of your sort of little
fleet?
Your fleet?
I don't want to say it
Damn
because
it. I feel like you should though.
But it's an anonymous game, and so if the other players listen and they find out who I am, It could. It could.
Yeah, but I mean, you've just said that you never betray anyone. I think you should also.
If you're not
going to
betray anyone,
Yeah, but that's the thing, that people will take advantage of that.
No. At the moment, they wouldn't come.
At the moment, I have the advantage that people go, "Oh, this person could betray me." So they don't want to, you know. So
I just think you're not very trusting, Carlo. For someone who doesn't betray anyone, you're not very trusting.
Also, I probably can't say no. Anyway, I won't.
Okay, fair
so
enough.
So it's a great game. Like, if you want a game that will take months, because
and I see you, like, playing it on your phone. Like, he came in and he had, he's like, my fleet is gonna, he's gonna destroy us. What are you?
We just did. We launched my allies and I launched a simultaneous strike and wiped out almost half of the fleet of one of our enemies. Wow. We're a peacekeeping force, so we're going to war with these guys because they harbored space criminals.
Is that war that you've added on, or is that
no? There was a guy that was really aggressive and was wiped out, and then we said to this other player, said, "Oh, you have to surrender them." Like, and they were like, "Nah, we're going to help them," and so they. So we went in to take out these space criminals. So there's this sort of gypsy flotilla, a bit like the Quarians, of about seven ships of this space criminal just flying around space, avoiding justice. It's, great fun.
Oh, man. Dear me. Well, look, I mean, what I wanted to talk about, you know, it's not exactly the same level as intergalactic warfare, but it's still pretty cool. GamerX Australia, the Kickstarter for the... for the GX convention, which was going to be an event specifically aimed at inclusivity and open to the gay and lesbian Australian sort of gaming communities, mm-hmm. passed its funding.
Yeah.
So it's officially going to happen. The dates are February 27th, February 28th next year.
I think they've even exceeded the funding that they wanted.
They did. They only needed a couple thousand, I think, in the last sort of 12 hours, and they smash through it.
So they've at the moment they're sitting on about $53,000, which is awesome.
Yeah, actually, I've got all the numbers. I've got all the numbers just here, and they needed 50,000, and
that's great.
Yeah, it's awesome. So then now it's just a matter of getting your tickets and getting along to it.
So it's an expert convention thing.
Yeah, pretty much. And they've got a lot of, there is a sort of a focus or a spotlight on. Any game that's made by people, by sort of prominent members of the gay and lesbian community, but it's just open to everyone. Which I think there were a lot of I'm going to call them internet commenters who took issue with it. Well, I mean, you know, if it's open to everyone, why do you have to call it GamerX? It's like, well, maybe you shouldn't come then.
we don't want you there. It's fine.
But it looks great, and I think we're definitely
really exciting guests planned. The creator of Fallout. I think is one.
Wow. Really?
If I'm correct in what I saw in that video, pretty sure.
I'll bring up the
organizers of GamerX in the States, the original.
So it's an American thing.
Going
to
come?
Yeah, and they've got a lot of local people that are going to be there as well. Eve Beauregard, friend of the show, Eve Beauregard's going to be there. Hang on, here we go. They've got a lot of great indie games as well. Hacknet, Hand of Fate, Armello, and a favorite of ours, Dungeon League.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, and there's
all deeply involved in the, you know, they're going to really heavily promote indie games and stuff.
Yeah, and there's some deals. You can still, up until I think today, you can still contribute to their Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And there are some really cool packages. Like, if you spend a certain amount of money, you'll get a few free games with swag bag, Australian indie titles. So, yeah, really
that's
cool.
Great.
And I've got the list of the people here. You're right, Carlo. Chris Avalone, who was the writer for the original Fallouts and Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah, great.
Ray Johnston, our good old mate Ray. She's going to be there. Aussie Gamer Chick, Carlo, who I know you're a big fan of on YouTube. There's Tim Kane, who is best known as the producer, lead programmer, and designer of the original Fallout. I guess that's who you were thinking of.
Yeah.
They've got a huge list of people, including... Alex Greenwich, who is the independent member for Sydney.
Yeah.
I love it when politicians get on the gaming bandwagon.
Scott Ludlam, what's he doing?
Yeah, well, I reckon Ludlam, he'd be all over it.
Ludders will be all over it.
We should, in fact, you know, we should send a little press release his way and be like, yo, Scott, you got to go to this.
Scotty, mate.
Scott.
It's your boy, Ben.
But I think we've got it, like, if we can sort of get the dates to add up, it does perfectly align with sort of roughly the same time of the month we tend to do bonus stage.
Hey, GamerX Australia.
And the event is like a 5-minute walk from the John Dwarf Theatre.
Hey, GamerX Australia.
And I got nothing on.
That's not as exciting, surprising, is it?
Okay, we're all friends here.
Oh no, he's crying again.
No, I'm fine. Let's go to some music. This is the Fallout 4 main theme. Oh, we're nice gonna come upbeat. Back and start our mega 2-part review of Fallout 4 in 2RRR 88.5 FM. I'm not crying.
Here we go.
Welcome back. We're here now to talk about a little game I like to call Fallout 4. Now, guys, it has been how many weeks since Fallout 4 came out?
One?
Can you even remember? I think it's 2 weeks.
Nah. Yeah, maybe it's two.
Nah.
Nah.
2 weeks. Three, if anyone got a review copy. Did anyone buy it?
No,
get a
it's not three.
Kylo, did you get a review copy?
No, I didn't.
Oh, no, I did.
Seems like an odd thing to brag about.
You're an incredible douchebag.
No, look, it's been a long... Like, it's just... I think for a lot of people, it has dwarfed everyone's gaming
agendas.
I don't know why I bought this and Tomb Raider at the same time.
Haven't even put that in the...
I haven't even installed Tomb Raider. Like, I don't... I haven't even finished the first Tomb Raider, you know? Like, really? That's what I was playing in the lead-up to Fallout 4. I was like, well, great, I'll finish Tomb Raider, play Tomb Raider, the new Tomb Raider.
And see how Fallout 4 goes.
And then I'll play
Fallout 4. Oh, but boy, you're in for a treat with the next Tomb Raider, eventually.
Oh, man.
I might borrow it off of you in a couple of weeks.
Which one?
You can borrow it from me now.
Mine's on my actual hard drive, so no.
Oh, I'm banned.
You can't. Oh, I'm banned. I'm from the future. I download games onto my hard drive.
I'm sorry, it was weak.
But look, I mean, this is... We should put up right up front that in terms of spoilers, we're not going to talk about anything main story-wise. I'm not going to talk about the main narrative. But we are probably going to talk about
couple quests.
Cool stuff we've stumbled on in the wasteland, experiences we've had playing it. So if you are trying to avoid all of Fallout... As much as it pains me to say, you probably shouldn't listen to this. Or just pause it. Oh. If you're listening to the podcast, go play some Fallout.
Listen, but just cover your ears.
And then come back and listen.
Just block your ears.
You know, we're not going to be outlining really specific stuff, but I mean, the joy of Fallout is that three people in this room have probably had quite different experiences just exploring.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, from a story point of view, Carlo, I know you were saying a couple of weeks ago when you just started playing this game, how it instantly grabbed you a lot more than Fallout 3 did.
Mm. Yeah.
And from what you were saying last night on Bonus Stage, you've really gotten sort of hell for leather in terms of role-playing in this game.
Oh, I'm right. I'm right into the mind of Helena. No last name.
Okay, so can I talk about that first, real quick? Yeah. You know how they, at the very start of the game, you're greeted by a lovely chap.
Codsworth, the robot.
No, the dude who comes to the door.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when you like input your name and stuff like that. And it said name, and I panicked and put in like a full name.
I did that too.
Now every time my character speaks, it's the whole name.
What's your whole name? What's your character's name?
I don't want to talk about it.
No, come on.
Scott McNeil.
Is it really? Who's Scott McNeil?
You're going to laugh at me if I tell you. I'll tell you off the air.
I'm going to Google Scott McNeil.
It's not a real person.
Oh, I really want to know who Scott McNeil is.
It's a pretty good name.
Actually, it is a real person. It's an Australian-Canadian actor and voice actor.
That's absolutely cool.
Who's in Fallout?
From the series Bionicles and Beast Wars.
I loved.
You got nothing.
No.
And there's a YouTube video, The 100 Roles of Scott McNeil.
So, really?
Dragon Ball Z. Wow, Barty, you picked a real great voice actor.
I didn't even know that. Not like,
So should we talk briefly about each of our characters and sort of...
Give us a rundown on Helena first.
Good idea.
So I've played with Helena, who basically... So this is, again, if you don't want any spoilers from the very beginning of the game, just tune out for a second. So pretty much from the get-go, she's all about her family. I have warned the spoilers. So this
is you're good.
Beginning of the game. I think this big spoiler happens in the first 20 minutes, and I think we got to talk about it.
Yeah, so people have been warned. I'm just worried. Anyway, so...
the game doesn't take place in the 50s. Like, people know that, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
So her husband gets killed, her son gets taken, and so my goal was instantly, I'm getting my son back. So you go to that town, you rescue some people, and they're like, can you stay and help us? Like, no, why would I do this? I'm going to save my daughter. So my son. So my whole MO is basically, like, gunning for it.
Yeah.
But then it was really fun because I was... it got quite far in the main story, and I kind of got diverted onto this really great quest line, which is the Silver Shroud quest line. Hmm. And my character got really into this idea of role-playing as this Silver Shroud character.
You're role-playing a character who's role-playing.
Yeah, but I got so into the role-play as well. Like, I was wearing the Silver Shroud everywhere. I was talking to people. Like, I got into... I was, like, in my mind, I was playing... like a 50s detective simulator. Like, I was always using the Shroud voice. I ended up hooking up with this with the singer at that dive bar, and that whole thing felt like a 50s
scene. I couldn't get her to like me.
Man, really? You've got to have that high charisma.
This is one thing I should say about the build of my characters, is I always like to have real definite strengths and definite weaknesses. So I gave my character very little strength. Like, she has one strength, but I maxed her charisma out. She had 9 charisma when I started the game, and then my first level up, I made her 10.
Yeah.
You know, so she's and really high intelligence and luck and perception. So, I like the idea that she's a, because she was a lawyer, so she's like a really good talker, really intelligent, switched on, but hasn't got that, like, hasn't put it that much time into like close combat and armor. Why would you? You know, yeah. So that's been really, really fun to do. So I had this whole arc of this storyline of this 50s thing. Everything went bottom up, and my character had this realization, and I had this realization that I had got so far into this role play, and I had forgotten the important thing, which was saving my son. So now I've been straight back into that. And to that end, I went on another really cool quest, which is called the Freedom Trail.
That is
a really fun quest.
That's a great quest.
I like it.
That's one we shouldn't spoil what you do in it, but I mean, a lot of the quests in these Bethesda open world games, you know, you select the quest and it gives you a little waypoint, tells you exactly where to go. Whereas Freedom Trail just gives you like a starting point, and then you have to figure out.
Yeah,
basically, it's sort of like a puzzle, and it was really cool.
Yeah. I remember how that ended. It was, that was a good one.
It was like in the sort of Elder Scrolls game, how it's like it's always a little bit of a fun challenge to figure out how you start the Dark Brotherhood.
Yeah,
it's that kind of like, you know, how do you find out about this secret organization?
Similar. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
There are some really, like, some of the quests in that game, man, they start off, it's like an episode of Simpsons. You know, an episode of Simpsons would start off as one thing and then would end with an entirely, like, different storyline? That's what I've loved so far about some of the quests that I've stumbled across in this game, is that they start as these seemingly innocuous, simple tasks. And some of them just grow to be these interwoven stories linking like governments and like just some of them are ridiculous.
So what kind of character are you playing?
Tell us about Scott McNeil.
Scotty McNeil. My role play doesn't go nearly as deep as yours. I built him. He's a lot of strength, a lot of charisma.
I could tell that just from the name.
Yeah, Scott McNeil, bloody hero of time. I'm not maxed out in my charisma. He's sort of a smartass, but like
you, a lot of sarcastic options.
A lot of sarcastic.
There are some great dialogue options.
Yeah, a lot of sarcastic and a lot of the B, because that's when someone else is speaking.
There's a mission where you're meeting a pretty big prominent character, and they're like, "Well, what are you doing here?" And if you choose a sarcastic option, your character goes, "Oh, I hear someone ordered a pizza. I got an extra large here for F you."
Whoa! Let's just take a step. Let's calm down, mate.
I'm just like,
Jesus.
It's like, whoa, that's not sarcastic. That's like really quite sassy. Like,
he's going to attack
that's
you.
That's a maximum sass.
Calm down. But I remember I was walking along in the main city area of Boston, just near Diamond City, just outside of it. And I came to this like fountain, like this pond area. And I clicked VATS just because sometimes I do that just to see if there's any enemies around me. And I don't know if you guys came across this. It zooms into the middle of the fountain.
The swan.
And it zooms into the middle of the fountain, and it just says swan. And I was like, what? I guess it looks like a swan. So I didn't attack it because I was, why is this a thing that I can attack? I walked a little closer, and it just grows out of the water, and it's this giant, like, behemoth thing with this swan feature, like, centerpiece attached to it. And I was just like, oh, cool, run.
Yeah.
So I ran away, realized I had the nuke, you know, the fat, what is it, fat boy?
Fat boy. Fat man.
Fired like 4 of those at him, whittled him down to real low health, and then spent the next 20 minutes just running around trying to like take pot shots at him. Really, eventually killed it, and I was just like, oh, wow. That was absolutely terrifying, rose.
The game is great at having those big bosses, but I have to say, it does diminish the challenge of like going... one-on-one with a Deathclaw when you realise all you can do is just go hide in a doorway and they can't fit through the doorways.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because every time I came across like a legendary Alpha Deathclaw or whatever, and I walked, it was just chilling in this, it was sitting in this house. I was on my way to Salem. Have you guys been to Salem yet?
No. Yeah, okay, which museum? Was it the Witch Museum? Museum?
Yes.
Yeah, so I was going to bring this up.
On the way there, not even there, on the way there, there was a bombed out house. And I opened the door. I'm like, oh, this is one. What's in Deathclaw? Just inside the house. And I was like, nah.
See, I have this fun thing. Like, my character mostly plays as a loner.
Yeah.
And I have the perks for being a loner. But I do like occasionally, like when I took out the swan, because I'd seen it and I went back, got my power armor, and I use my companions as a sort of bait. Squire.
Yeah.
So they carry all my heavy weapons. So I always like to get in there as the power armor and be like, Squire, and then go and get, like, select one of my guns from their inventory. So I had Piper carrying, like, a heavy flamer and a minigun. So I was like, Squire, and then took these guns, and then... Yeah, that was a really fun little combat. Yeah.
What about on that subject? Do you guys have favorite companions of the people you found?
I just recruited Hancock.
Oh yeah. The
mayor of
the party
Good
boy
neighbor.
Mayor Ghoul.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's great, but it's most of the time it's been Nick Valentine, the
he's great.
Detective.
I lost my dog. I can't find it.
Oh, you can get it back. Go to Red Rocket. It'll come back.
It's not there.
It comes back.
It's not there.
It's there. That's what
it's not there.
Oh, wow.
Although, you know who I do have there, and this is a minor spoiler, like from a thing that you discover on the side, but since we're doing it anyway, you mentioned the guy at the start of the game who... Who knocks on your door and gives you your stuff. You meet him again. He's a ghoul. Because he didn't get into it, so he was really bitter because he wasn't let into the vault. And he's like, I poured my whole life into that company.
I sent
him to survive.
And you can recruit
years.
Him to like hang out in one of your
I sent him to one of my settlements, but he hasn't showed up there.
How does he survive?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The ghouls survive longer?
Yeah. Ghouls live really long. Yeah, and so now he just lives at Red Rock. He's the only one at the Red Rocket. He just sits there cooking and doing stuff.
Yeah,
you know what? Doesn't matter.
I sent him to Sanctuary, and he hasn't showed up there.
Probably
and
killed him.
Away.
Yeah, it really disappoints me, because I wanted to talk to him more.
How you doing,
it
buddy?
It was a real lonely guy. Look, let's go to a quick song, and then come back, keep talking Fallout. Sound good?
We could not do that and carry on talking about Fallout. All right,
oh no, the song's already playing. Oh, no, this is enough for Fallout 4. We'll be back after this. We're on Big Head Mode, talking Fallout 4. Guys, let's crack in. We talked a lot about the story and the narrative and stuff. Let's talk about the more tangible aspects of it, say gameplay, graphics, all that jazz. Mm-hmm. In terms of gameplay, Carl, I remember you had a complaint early on with Fallout 3 that it was a little bit too... You didn't like the shooting aspect of it so much.
Yeah.
Has the combat... Have your opinions changed at all on the combat in this game?
I just feel like the combat... And I don't know if maybe I wasn't doing... Fallout 3 right, but I always felt like your weapons were at the beginning extraordinarily underpowered, and it got to the point where I would just hate running into anything in the wasteland, anything, like, oh, it's a rad roach, and it would just and it would just trying to shoot it, and you would run out of ammunition quickly.
The thing I found with 3 was, I think, and I think you said it as well, is that it harks back to like Morrowind type of style of gameplay, whereas you would have a rad roach in front of you, you'd shoot it, and everything would miss. Like, you would, like, the actual non-VATS combat to me felt pointless almost.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, it's so spot on.
Yeah.
The shooting, I think, especially compared to 3.
Yeah, absolutely.
It definitely feels more satisfying if you don't have any action points.
I've been,
and you do have to manually shoot. Like, I feel at least like you can to an extent now.
I hardly use
VATS. Especially
when
you get better weapons.
Yeah, me too. I only use it when I'm like, I'm stressed.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I always use VATS, but that's because I use a lot of single shot weapons, and I love just that. Also, I just got that sweet, because I'm level 10 agility, that sweet perk you can get where if you VATS multiple targets, every extra target does more damage.
Yeah, cool.
So you walk into a room with 6 people, VATS them all, but just shoot them all once. The last guy just like instantly explodes.
Great. Did you get the Bloody Mess perk?
No, I didn't.
I mean,
we were talking about characters before. I really want to roll a character who is just all luck and no other skills. And so any other skills they get, they actually have to earn from the wasteland, but they go into it with nothing but...
That's pretty cool.
Nothing but luck.
You'd still have leftover points because you start off with about 15.
Well, then anything else like that, I think I'd put into charisma.
Yeah.
But like nothing that's like a tangible...
Just a really lucky, nice guy. Know.
Yeah, or maybe intelligence. Actually, no, I want him to be dumb. I want him to just be like, no useful skills.
Split it, I reckon, between
maybe just like, maybe everything I put into charisma is just like bartering, like financial benefit type stuff. I think that would be an amazing character. I really enjoyed the gunplay. I thought it was really good.
And the guns all seem very different and diverse. Like, and
once you get into actually modding them, like, you really have to invest a few points into gun nut to actually yield good stuff out of it. But once you do, like, you can make some really sweet guns.
Yeah, I've got a pistol that's about a meter long.
Dude, you know what? It's a pistol with one of those really long, light barrels, but then a suppressor. You just crouch, walk into a room, and just take everything out without anyone knowing.
There's a mission in the game that gives you you get this a silenced pistol from one of the characters. And I've customized that a lot, that one. And it's really, because I've also upgraded my sneak heap. So going to rooms, popping a bunch of them, and then being like, "Yo, what's up?" Clearing it without anyone seeing. It's not really what the game is designed. Like, it's not designed to be very stealthy. I don't think the stealth in it is very good. And that might be one of my complaints.
We should probably say that. I mean, they really have. It is the same stealth system that Bethesda have been using.
I mean, it's the same.
Morrowind.
Yeah.
I think Oblivion was the first detected caution system.
Yeah. It's that exact same thing. It just blow a guy's head off, and then his mate, after 30 seconds, goes, "Must have been the wind." Yeah. Meanwhile, his head's like, exploded. His friend's head is on him.
I think my biggest, for a game that has a stealth element, that it tries to have a stealth element with the hidden detected and the fact that there are a bunch of like stealth perks, it just doesn't work very well. I don't think it's very good.
I just don't use it. Because I had 10 charisma from like level 2, I got intimidate at about level 3. So I just go into rooms and go like,
point your gun at them.
Hands up, guys. So you get everybody to surrender, and then...
Do they actually put their hands up and surrender?
Yeah, everybody puts their hands up, and then you go and talk to them like, please, they're like, just don't shoot me. And you say a different line depending on what you're fighting, like, calm down there, you big crab, for my lurks and stuff. Yeah.
Really?
I really like that. I really want to do that.
Is that charisma?
Yeah.
On that subject of, you know, perks and stuff like that, how do you guys feel about the whole level up system? It is streamlined a lot. It's a lot closer, I think, to the Skyrim level up system.
I really, really like it. Mm. I love the thing that I love the most about it is the only prereqs are your level.
Yeah,
you know, so it means that from the very beginning you can have the mysterious stranger, or you can have really cool perks from a very, very beginning, because that's always something like. Skyrim is the classic example of it. You know, you want to work towards something like, oh yeah, I really want to work towards crafting glass armor. Mm. I have to go through all these different stages, but it's such a slog to go between them because you have to level up smithing, not yourself. So you could be level 50, but you might have smithing 17, and so you're kind of constantly working on smithing so you can build it up. Whereas I like that the idea is, once you get to level 50, or like once you get to level 25, you can unlock a really high powered part of, say, pickpocketing or whatever. Yeah. You know,
I do think it's weird. Like, my biggest problem with this game is that, I mean, that level up system is great at giving you a million ways to really just pre-build your character, like what you want your character to be, like the stuff that we've just been talking about. You know, you could whatever background you want your character to have. I feel like that's really at odds with the narrative portrayal of the characters, because you really do just get two characters, the female, the male, and there's not a lot of shades within those character choices because they're voice acted. You know, it's not Commander, like you don't feel like you get the full range of a character like you do with Commander Shepard or something. Mm. It kind of feels like the female voice actor feels tougher, the male voice actor
bit more
comes off as very snarky. Yeah. You kind of looked in as the snarky. I mean, I've grown to like it, but
yeah, me too.
That's not the character that I started out making, and so it's just I kind of gradually fell into that character.
See, I couldn't have been happier with the voice acting for the character that I wanted to play, because when you play the out for myself doing my quest sort of Clint Eastwood style character. The voice acting is perfect, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But you're right. It does lock you into feeling a certain way about the character.
Yeah,
They've definitely taken away that whole imprint what the audience wants the character to be like. They've taken that away in this one. And initially, I was sort of bummed out about it, but I've actually liked the way the characters. I don't know if I've been forced to like it, which is why I like it. But I'm happy with the way the character.
Yeah, like you kind of grow to like it, but it has made me think more carefully about for future characters how I would play them, factoring that in. Like I know that I can do a tougher, bandit sympathizing type.
I do care
female
more.
Character.
You do,
and I can do a snarky rogue male.
Yeah,
they'd line up better.
Yeah, I do end up. You do end up caring more about the story because that was one of the other things about 3, and even New Vegas obviously was different, but 3 especially. Like I just didn't care at all about what was happening in the world in the story. It was more interesting to see what the world around me was like. Whereas with this one, the world around me is incredible, and I'm stumbling across all this cool stuff. But the character in the story, I'm more invested in, which I think is good.
Yeah.
The one problem that I do have, and this is a problem that, like Bethesda have had since Oblivion, and this is the last point I'll make, is that they push they make the narrative extraordinarily driven. Like there are no bits where they say go rest up, so you kind of have to make those choices depending on your character, which is good and bad in a way.
Yeah,
because otherwise you just the impetus is always like we need to go and do this. You have to do this now. We leave.
It does feel more urgent, I guess, than previous main sort of stories.
And not many people are like barreling through that main story. No one's going, okay, we have to go do this thing. Yeah, no.
Well, I know a few people. I know a few people who have just because they do feel really charged by. I've got to find my son.
Yeah, and then go and do all the other stuff.
Maybe they never
will. Because the way I've been doing it, it's been like. I'm going to go find my son, followed by, I'm just going to go and see what's up in the pond.
And on that note, we should all go and see what's up in the pond. Look, I think it's a definite, it's a solid review from all of us. I think we'd all recommend this game.
Yeah.
We're not buying it, but what is he now?
Sorry, it's great, it's great.
Look, let's go to some messages and say goodbye. Well, look, that brings us to the end of another show. As always, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Barty Colo. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, it's been a bloody pleasure.
It's been awesome.
This is Set the World on Fire. We'll be back next week. Until then, you guys keep on gaming. See you next week.
Bye.